afternoon. Today is Thursday, July the 17th. Already. 202nd day of the new year. Joining us this afternoon, Natalie Attired. Hey, but I outflashed? No, I didn't. Man, you got me on stripes. You got me on the tie. That really... Fred Van Fleck. Fashion plate.
Well, thank you.
Now, what was the Saturday Night Live? Oh, I don't remember what it was now. I got to remember who the actor was. I'll kick that one around during the commercial break. I'm sure you remember, and I just don't want to look too stupid. So what is it you got over there? A couple piles of notes and all kinds of cool stuff.
Well, yeah, I want to talk a little bit about our next generation and their willingness to give back to the community with community service.
Ah, charity. Yes or no? When we come back.
Music from your trip to Latin America? You are invited to listen to the newest member of our radio family, 1790 AM, a Spanish language music station with sports from ESPN and news from CNN Español. If you own a business, invite Juan listeners into your business. For information, call 442-5744 or go to juan790.com. 1790, tocando lo que le gusta.
Good afternoon, KINS, News and Information Times, 313. We're back to Talk Shop this afternoon with Fred Van Fleck. But before we do, see, notice I'm just hyphenating it all now for you. Instead of that dramatic pause.
Yes, I've heard out in the community, people have picked up on the pause.
Really?
It's become trendy.
Ooh, does that mean I'm a trendsetter? I didn't think so. Our quote this afternoon comes from Aristotle. You remember him?
Heard of him.
Okay.
Don't remember him.
Well, I didn't know if they taught that in the ag side of the school or not. Quote, without friends, no one would choose to live, though he had all the other goods. There you go. Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. So what's life like in the summertime?
Life is busy in the summertime right now, actually. We've got all kinds of things going on. And believe it or not, we're almost a month away from school starting again.
Yeah. Blink.
Exactly.
You guys have used the summertime, obviously, to maintain or do some of the deferred maintenance in some of the different facilities. We've seen it out here, the school is close to the station studios. A lot of retrofit, I guess, or maintenance. I mean, it's not earthquakes or seismic retrofit. It's just retrofitting some of the buildings. Is there a program? Just an ongoing schedule that does give you guys that general direction when there's an opportunity for Christmas break. And I remember going through school during Christmas break. You come back, always there was something a little bit different, taking advantage of those downtimes of the school.
Right. The program we have is what's called site facility visits. And my chief business official, Paul Ziegler, goes out twice a year with our head of maintenance. And
that'd be Trojan Paul.
Yeah, sure.
Okay, not Cornhusker, Paul.
No.
We just want to make sure we don't get the right one. Okay, good. Okay.
So anyways, he goes out twice a year with our director of maintenance and our transportation supervisor, who also oversees custodial, and they create, not only they visit the site, they look for deficiencies in areas that the sites are doing very well in maintenance, and then they create lists at each site, and then those lists get prioritized and scheduled out as far as when we will take care of some of the things that are on the list.
Some part of summer is in the current fiscal year. That would be the new. Some parts of summer are in the old fiscal year. That would be last year before July 1st.
Correct.
Is that part of the prioritization to see what dollars are available at the end of the year and put them to those kinds of projects and have like a priority list of those and then a secondary priority list where you got the whole money for the entire year and maybe you can tackle some of the big projects at that time?
Well, I wish it was like that and we had a bunch of extra money to do things, but fortunately or unfortunately, whichever way you want to look at it, all those projects are budgeted.
Paint the flagpole. I mean, that would be a small project.
That's a small project. Yeah. That's just the big cost there is labor, which is a big cost for us. Any projects that require the materials, that's what's planned well in advance and budgeted for. So, for instance, we just crossed the fiscal year. We're now in July, and we're in the 14-15 fiscal year. And we have many of our projects budgeted for this year, some of which won't take place until June. But the projects that we try to do over winter break, summer break, Easter, February break, those week-long or more breaks are the projects that would involve displacing students generally. So we try to get those taken care of during the breaks.
Christmas, Easter, President's Week, Thanksgiving week.
Correct.
Those are the primaries. Yeah.
Yep. Yep.
So looking at this summer, what have been those big projects?
Well, some of the projects that we have going on, we're doing a lot of MOW strips around the district. And the advantage of, believe it or not, the advantage of
MOW
strips.
MOW, MOW?
Yes, like lawn mower.
Like lawn mower,
yes,
okay.
Yes,
okay.
And the advantage of that is it cuts down our time in order to go in and mow at sites. So they can take the riding mower, mow right up to the strip. They don't have to do all the edging and weeding and all that stuff in planters. So it's a short-term investment to cut down on our time across the district. We're also doing lots of maintenance type projects around the district. We also have, although this isn't our project per se, but the Safe Routes to Schools is doing a big sidewalk project on the way to Grant Elementary School over there off of Oak Street.
Just so that there are sidewalks the whole way?
I wouldn't say there's going to be sidewalks the whole way. What they did was Jenny Wise and her group, through the Redwood Action Authority, created a parent and community group out there, and they did several walks and studied the most traveled routes to school. And that's what they developed this grant on, where they redid sidewalks.
F Street and H Street.
Yes. And Campton right there is where H Street's in Campton.
Yeah.
Is really bad.
You really had to do a study to look at those?
Well, that's part of how it works to get grant funding. So
okay.
Yep. Yeah.
Get out there, count the cars, or get the traffic studies from the city?
It wasn't a formal study like that. It was more of an informal study where they got together with the parents and watched the kids walk into school and figure out where the areas of concern are. So it wasn't like it was a small bureaucracy as opposed to a big bureaucracy.
Part of the challenge, I would think, is how do you set aside areas for parents to drop the kids off? Not the time that they get dropped off, but how to, and developing that circulation pattern around the schools. Are all of the elementary schools, and I guess the junior high also, designed properly for that?
Absolutely not. And I kind of smirk because I think back to my days of being a high school principal, and the only time that I've ever been cussed out is on parking lot duty. Parents take it very personally when you tell them where to go when they're trying to drop their kids off.
Well, if you didn't wear that shirt, I will tell you where to go. That might have helped out. It's 319.
Nearly half a century in the news business should count for something. I'm Dave Silverbrand, and that's how long I've been watching the world go by. Now it's time to put it in perspective. Join me each weekday for a look at local news and views and what they mean to you from my perspective. Dave's Take Two on KWSW three times each day during the 8, noon, and 5 o'clock hours. Or read them on our website, kwsw980.com.
Good afternoon, KINS, News and Information Times, 324. We're back to Talk Shop this afternoon with Fred Van Fleck. Fred, the concept of dropping kids off at school, I know it's... Well, I don't know if you were a Fluffy fan or not.
Fluffy?
Fluffy. Mr. Iglesias, yes.
Oh, okay, yes.
If you are a Fluffy fan, he has a little thing about dropping kids off at school. Mm-hmm. As one of his routines. I know a lot of other comics do as well.
Mm-hmm, mm-hmm.
But it really is kind of halfway serious
mm-hmm.
to do it right, and particularly when we've got kids that aren't paying attention and parents that are behind the eight ball.
I'll tell you, one of the scariest places, and I get the opportunity to drop my kids off there, is parents that don't go down into the Zane parking lot. And
Dropping off on S?
Yeah, they just drop off right there on S Street, right there where S turns to West in the dip down there. and they send their kids across the street, not necessarily in the crosswalk or anywhere around there. That place is a zoo after school, and it gets pretty scary. And we've actually had we had a student, although the student was wrong in what he was doing, get hit on a bicycle there one day. It was about a year and a half ago, and what was happening was someone was turning right out of the Zane parking lot on S Street right there.
Oh, the driveway? Coming.
Yep. And a bicycle was going the wrong way and was coming toward that. And when they turn right, naturally when you turn right, you look left. You don't pay much attention to your right because the traffic is coming from your left, and hit the kid on the bicycle. Luckily, it was okay. Didn't do any permanent damage or anything like that. But there's lots of scary close calls. And so the more that we can do to get parent drop-off locations for students off the main streets and separated from where the buses drop off the students, the better. Because parent drop-off and bus drop-offs just really don't mix together very well.
Well, I would think it's a bit of a challenge, particularly as you're using a facility that is used differently than the initial design. Zane, I mean, we can use that one as an example because IR one. Yeah, you come in the main driveway. Well, at one point, you used to be able to go out down towards what is, at that time, I don't know what you got in there now, but was the art and industrial ed and home ec and the shop class, that outbuilding.
Right.
Well, and then you just shoot out that, go down to the right, and you don't have that kind of big concentration at one place for all the vehicles and the kids walking and the kids trying to cross the street and.
Well, what happens
is things have changed.
But what happens is we've actually improved upon that model if the parents come all the way in and drop off by the gym. But instead of doing that, parents are late sometimes, and I'm just as guilty as the next guy. I've done the same thing.
I would see them dropped a block or two away from Booner and S.
And that's actually
and then
better.
They walk the last.
That's actually better. It's when you drop them off right there in front of that lower entrance to Zane where you can't drive in, and just send them across the road right there away from the sidewalk. That's where it gets scary.
Well, the only reason we don't drive in is because you don't allow those pylons to be pulled.
Yep.
Yep. So that got commandeered. And Zane is probably the best laid out school that you've got, short of maybe Eureka High, maybe. But all the elementary schools, you look at it, and it's amazing there aren't more traffic incidences reported as either hits or near hits or winged or, PTA meetings every other day talking about how to drop your kids off.
Every single one of our elementary schools do not have a separated bus drop-off and parent drop-off. And in fact, both Grant and Washington, the buses drop off on the street. There is no pull off of the street to drop the students off. And you think about that, we've got students in transitional kinder that are 4 years old that we're dropping off of some of those buses. And that's a little scary to me. And I think that's something that we really need to address and make sure that we're doing everything we can to keep those young children safe.
Is there, short of jackhammers and probably because of prevailing wage, et cetera, millions of dollars that have to be spent at each facility to put in a drop-off lane? Are there simple solutions that can be done? Are there things that is anybody looking at this stuff? Or is everybody just kind of focused either on their classroom or their campus and not really, if you're a teacher and you get there at 7:45, it's tough to really understand what's going on at 8:20 as the parents are dropping their kids off if you're in your classroom.
Well, I can say the principals are out there focusing on it every day because I've been out there, and I'll never forget the one time I went to drop my daughter off at the wrong spot at Washington Elementary School and I got in trouble by the principal. Because you're not allowed to pull into the parking lot to drop them off.
Oh, and, the teacher parking lot?
Right, correct.
You didn't whip out your superintendent plates?
Nope.
Or whip the metal sign on the side?
Nope, but I sure did get the finger shook at me. Oh, not an inappropriate finger, not a bad finger.
Well, that's okay. Yeah, better than getting two of them, I suppose.
Yes.
So as you're looking at summer projects, or Paul and the maintenance guys are going around looking at those kinds of things, are they worried about circulation, or are they looking at the buildings and the roofs and the siding and the needing to run more Cat 5 lines and all that kind of stuff?
Really what we're doing is mainly maintenance projects. Because as soon as you start getting into any type of new construction project, short of putting in a mow strip like I talked about earlier, it just gets so out of hand as far as the manpower that's needed. We can't staff that much manpower year-round. So those are things that have to be done outside of the district. And as soon as you step outside of the district, you start talking prevailing wages and you start getting into those six-plus zeros.
Could you just call a couple of, I guess, public works guys? Maybe retired public works people that live within about a half mile of that elementary school you were talking about, and have them kind of come in and do a quick little, well, if you did this and this and this, it looks like it would alleviate 95% of your problems.
Right. So that's actually where we have the architect come in and look at what we have there, and they actually do traffic studies to look at where the traffic's going.
We'll study that when we come back.
The flame of learning is lit daily at St. Bernard's.
St. Bernard's has openings for new children in our preschool and pre-kindergarten classes. Hi, I'm David Sharp, president of St. Bernard's Catholic School. St. Bernard's Early Childhood Education Center, license number 12540-2277, offers preschool and pre-kindergarten. We're open year-round from 7:30 a.m. to 5 p.m. Call us at 443-7705 to schedule a visit.
St. Bernard's High School and Elementary School, making a difference in lives for today and tomorrow.
Good afternoon, KINS, News and Information Time, 3:35. We're back to Talk Shop this afternoon with Fred Van Fleck from Eureka City Schools. Fred, so you, it sounds like, you know, the crew's kind of busy either doing some of the research or doing some of the work right now. What about some of the different classes? I know curriculum is the thing that people get really excited about, or they don't pay any attention to at all. It's kind of like a textbook. You don't pay attention to it until somehow it opens up and it doesn't have what you want in there. Or it has things that you don't want in there, then the hullabaloo comes off of that. When you're looking at the overall focus or the overall curriculum and that kind of stuff for the elementary, for the junior high, and for the high school, how do you put in what the community wants and still do what the state mandates, and then with the Fed purse strings accommodate those folks also? Because it seems like it would be a matrix that would be just horrific trying to figure out, and we're not even talking about the textbooks, we're just talking about the class offerings at this point. How do you put all that stuff together and still get a product that you can stand behind and go, this is good stuff?
Well, that really varies by the school level. And what is interesting when you think about that is you've got your core classes, math, English, science, social science, and then you have your elective classes. So getting away from those core areas, even when you talk K-12 all the way up, and you start getting the elective areas, that's where school districts have the autonomy or the local control to become creative and really focus on those areas that are important to the community.
Is there much creativity in the K-5, the elementary schools?
Where we focus most of our creativity time is music. And we have a music program.
In recess. Well, I mean, you're running around the physicalness of it. Yeah.
Right.
I mean,
right.
I wasn't totally being facetious on that one.
Right. But facetious or not, the reality is that most of the time that's spent inside the classroom, when you look at the K-5 time, aside from the music program, is focused on math and English. The vast majority of it. It's just really there.
I mean, we're not growing avocado seeds anymore?
I have not seen an avocado seed since I've been in Eureka City.
Really?
Nope.
The toothpicks in the bottle?
Oh, I remember. I remember.
The
I did.
Gross water? Yeah.
Yes, yes, yes.
Really? They don't have the time to do that stuff, or the focus is just in other areas?
I would say the focus is in other areas. And some teachers, they do have some time to bring in some science on different levels, and that's where the avocado seed would come in. And I don't think that the avocado seed hasn't been used just simply because it's out of fashion. But I don't know. I haven't seen, but they do projects like that. I've seen some seed projects in classrooms and different things like that during some of that science time that they do. But the amount of time spent on science in the K-5 levels is just nowhere near the amount of time that's spent on math or English.
Because there's a need for the acceleration in those areas, because there's less foundation when the kids are coming in. Why the change? I mean, numbers haven't changed since you and I were there. History obviously has, and some of the state mandates have. But, you know, learning how to read is learning how to read, whether it's the flashcards or whatever the current trend of doing. I know Dick and Jane are now hit the road, but there are other primer or base level reading stuff that's there. What's at the root in this thing?
So what's changed is when you and I were in school, well, when you were in school, then I was in school, but when you and I were in school, teachers had a lot of academic freedom as far as what they taught, when they taught it, and how much they focused on things. Now, more recently, it's been mandated by the state. And as we fast forward and move into next year, it started this year, next year really starting, it's going to be mandated by Common Core curriculum.
Even in the elementary schools?
Common Core starts out in kindergarten. It is absolutely K-12. And the reality of that is we're being mandated what we need to teach. And when you start talking about those K-5 classrooms, the lion's share of that time of the mandates is on math and English.
So is it math 1 + 2 = 4? Or it didn't even blink on that one. Holy Toledo. Okay.
Well, I realized.
Now I got them going. Now that good old arcade education's popping in now.
Well, I was going to say something about where you went to school, but then I thought, that's my district. Yeah, I better be careful.
Yeah. That's okay. Worthington's closed now. You're safe.
They broke the mold.
Yeah. Burned down the building, et cetera, et cetera. Is it you have to understand and grasp these areas of math, say, or is it you have to follow this textbook? Because, you know, I can see integrating things. I mean, let's do the cooking class, I guess, is an easiest way in the world to talk fractions. Okay, or metric system, or any of these other things that might be in this arena that need to be mastered. But we don't have to sit there and memorize the mathematical equation tables over and over and over. We can actually have some fun and bring in some dynamic perspectives into the classroom.
So if you go back to the state standards, which commonly referred to as California state standards, it was more about exactly what you're talking about. Here's the table. Memorize the table. Knowledge level information. As we move forward into Common Core, it's more of the application in trying to teach students to think, and it's rather than memorize. And it's really taking that next level of education. And there's a lot of controversy out there, and Texas being the big state right now, that's being the one that's controversial about the Common Core standards, because again, they're saying that it's too much of a canned program for the students. I, however, believe that Common Core will bring us forward as a nation as far as student learning.
And the Common Core is having that flexibility to kind of work around things, or that's the study the periodic chart and we'll have a test in 3 weeks?
Well, how Common Core is assessed is much different than how California standards were assessed. California standards were assessed in what's 1 + 1. The Common Core standards will be more about why does 1 + 1 = 2?
Or why are we considering why we were adding 1 + 1?
Yeah.
A little higher level thought. Yeah, okay.
That's second grade.
KINS, News and Information Times 342. No wonder it took me 4 years to get to that spot. We'll be back with more from Fred Van Fleck.
Attention 6th and 7th grade students. Plan now to attend the Ideas at Work Middle School Career Camp at College of the Redwoods this June. Campers take part in fun, hands-on projects in high-tech labs, tour businesses, and explore careers. There is no cost for this camp, but space is limited. Learn more and apply online at decadeofdifference.org or call 445-7563. Don't wait. Sign up today at decadeofdifference.org and be part of it.
Good afternoon, KINS, News and Information Times 345. We're back to Talk Shop this afternoon with the wily Fred Van Fleck. Yes. He just shared a little something he snuck past me. Kind of hacking me off, frankly. Didn't pay that much attention. Fred, if people want to kind of grasp what's going on, looking at curriculum, understanding what certain classes are or emphasis that's going on, how do they have the input? Say the school board, yeah, right, fine. Talk about a boring meeting. Sorry. Unless you're giving out free food and didn't get that memo. Yeah, it's not at a convenient time for a lot of folks. Typically, it's not an environment where input is often really welcomed. There are other things that are going on at that point. How do you find out what really is going on as a community member, not necessarily as a parent? And have whatever input, because some of us may actually have a viable idea.
Well, we're always open to hearing from parents. I will say, however, that a board meeting is one of the best venues for John Q. Public to come out during public comment and say whatever's on their mind and get the board informed about what they're thinking about. A good example of that is our last board meeting, June. We had a staff report on service learning. And one of the things that's very important to this current school board is that service learning is happening in our schools in Eureka City Schools.
What is service learning if you use regular English lexicon?
So service learning is all about community service.
Okay, just donating time, donating effort, right. Thinking outside yourself.
It's really interesting if you think about the generations and what's happened to community service, because if you go back to the baby boomers, community service was extremely important to them. And you think about...
Or was to their parents as they were growing up.
Right.
The baby boomers were growing up.
And we're talking...
We were more focused to ourselves, parents. On well, ourselves, right? Our own personal experience, not...
Well, the...
Largesse and grandiose.
Yeah, well, especially when you get to my generation. I'm a Gen Xer. And then you get into the millennials, which are next. And we're, I'm going to stereotype here for a second. We're a very selfish generation. It's the me generation, especially as you get into the millennials.
Well, you've learned from the best.
Well, yeah, absolutely. So, yeah. And that's what a lot of our local service clubs, you think about Rotary, and you go in there, and I'm actually impressed with, you know, you and I are both members of the same Rotary, and I'm actually impressed with the diversity of age in our Rotary group, because I think of traditional Rotary groups, and especially as you look around the state, the age there, generally it's a lot of gray hair.
Yeah, it's the grandmas and grandpas.
Right, right.
Typically, yeah.
And I think to a large part that's because my generation and some of the younger generations just haven't bought into the whole idea of the gratification of service learning and providing, or excuse me, of community service.
So when you're talking about community service, is there anything that is not included? I mean, you know, we talk... Yeah, Boy Scouts, Girl Scouts. Okay, Campfire Girls. I don't know if they still have Campfire Girls or if it's Campfire Kids. I know there was some kind of a change going on.
Mm-hmm.
You've got the mentor programs that are available. You've still got Peace Corps.
4-H.
Churches. 4-H, FFA. I mean, there's a lot of different things that are out there that can help to facilitate that. Do the schools have to be involved in forcing it?
Well, here's the interesting thing. As you take a look at our populations that come into Eureka City Schools, and a big majority of those folks aren't involved in those organizations you just talked about, because most of those organizations, kids get involved in them because their parents push them in those directions to get involved in those organizations. And so there's many parents out there that don't push their kids in that direction. So one of the things that we want to provide, and we think it's part of our obligation as a school district, is an avenue for students to learn about community service.
So is this, here's a list of different nonprofits that are within the city of Eureka that have indicated that they need some help, volunteer X number of hours, or is this the go out and pick up litter for 2 days during a semester and it gets checked off and everybody feels like we're doing some good stuff?
Well, I would say it's someplace in the middle, and then it's someplace well beyond that. I think I'm going to use the shotgun approach here. And when you think about that, we actually have some classes, a class called the East class. It's very at Eureka High School that's all about doing service projects. You think about the blood drive that's done. I believe it is, if not the biggest, one of the biggest blood donors is the Eureka High School blood drive. And that's all part of service learning.
So it manifests in many ways.
Absolutely.
Including wardrobe selection. You're looking sharp, man. Thanks for coming by, Fred.
Thank you.
Join us tomorrow afternoon for more Talk Shop. Till then, go out and make it a good day. Hug someone you love. See you tomorrow.